We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
From Learfield, welcome to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. Now, here is your host, the voice of the Eagles, Larry Weir.
Welcome to Flight Report. It's where we talk about Eastern Washington University athletics. Each week, I'll be talking to coaches, administrators, and occasionally players, or even former players. And that's the case once again this week, as we start with football head coach Aaron Best, then former basketball head coach Ray Giacoletti, and another of the athletes inducted into the Eastern Athletics Hall of Fame last Saturday, basketball player Alvin Snow. But before we hear those interviews, let's begin with a game recap from Eastern's dominant win over Cal Poly last Saturday. It was a beautiful, sunshiny day at Roos Field in Cheney, a little windy, but very comfortable temperature-wise, and Cal Poly going into the wind in the first quarter had a great grinding drive to start the game. 18 plays, 69 yards later, they had to settle for a field goal and led 3-0. The Eagle offense went 3-and-out with their first possession, but then the Eagle defense got back onto the field, and not only did they force a turnover, they put Eastern on top for good.
Second and 8 at the Eagle 48. Now the motion starts again. They fake it to pro throw, and the pitch goes over the head of the running back. It goes back inside the 40-yard line. It's picked up on the run at the 35, taking it down the left sidelines. That's Cole Karstetter. Touchdown. Touchdown, Eastern Washington.
After forcing a Cal Poly punt, the Eagles took the ball over once again, and Antoine Custer Jr., in his first game back from injury, capped a three-play, 71-yard drive to give the Eagles a 14-3 lead.
On 3rd and 1, they give it to Custer. Up the middle he goes, has a seam, 45-50. Giddy up, horse! Down the left side, 40, 30. Pursuit coming from the backside at the 20, but they won't catch him. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown, Eastern Washington, Antoine Custer Jr.
Early in the second quarter, Sam McPherson ran in from 3 yards out, and that put Eastern ahead 21-3. Cal Poly answered almost immediately to make the score 21-10, but then Eastern a four-play 75-yard drive just before the end of the half, and Gage Gubrud found Andrew Boston in the end zone.
Gubru takes the snap, wants to throw, does right side. Boston's out there. He got it. Touchdown. Touchdown, Eastern Washington. Just kind of the fade there, and Andrew Boston able to wall off this smaller corner.
Just before the end of the half, Cal Poly trying to run out the clock, basically, and the Eagle defense strike again.
Pressure coming now from the backside. Mitchell Johnson's got him.
Look at this.
Forces a fumble, picked up Jim Townsend. 50, 40, down the left sidelines, being pursued by a lineman at the 30, at the 20. The big man at the 10, he's to the 5, he's into the end zone. The second scoop and score for Eastern Washington. Touchdown.
Eastern led at 35-10 at the half. They went 3 and out, though, and had to punt in their first possession, and Cal Poly scored to cut the lead to 35-17. But the Eagle offense could not be stopped. They'd score 5 consecutive touchdowns in the second half. The first capped a 6-play 75-yard drive, another long Custer run, this one from 43 yards, and it was 42-17. Then Sam McPherson decided to get in on the act.
From the left hash mark, Gubrud hands it off. McPherson, hole opens, 45-40, big opening, getting up, Harris, 30, 20, down the middle of the field at the 10 to the 5, into the end zone, touchdown. I don't know that anybody touched him.
In the fourth quarter, it was a 24-yard run by Gubrud to make it 56-17. Then an Eric Berry, a 1-yard pass to Johnny Edwards, the fourth, made it 63-17. And Dennis Merritt ran it in from 81 yards out for the final score, Eastern 70, Cal Poly 17. The Eagles ran for 441 yards in just 30 carries in the game. That shattered the Big Sky Conference record for most yardage gained per rush in a single game. The previous record had been 11.1 yards. The Eagles averaged 14.7 in this win. It was also the first time since 2004 the Eagles doubled the amount of passing yards with rushing yards in a single game. With the win, Eastern moved up to fifth in both major FCS polls as they get ready for a game this weekend at Montana State. Both teams are 1-0 in the Big Sky, 3-1 overall on the season. Our airtime is 11 o'clock with kickoff just after noon on the Eagle Sports Network from Learfield. That's your game recap of the Cal Poly game, and now let's have our weekly interview with Eagle head football coach Aaron Best.
All right, Coach, great win on Saturday. I don't think that anybody would have predicted that you would outrush the rushing team, though, in that ball game. Great job by the guys blocking. Great job by the guys running.
Awesome job. Very, very proud to know that the plan that was put in place by the offensive staff from a rushing standpoint was executed as about as good as it could have been by those guys up front. And by those guys, I mean the offensive line, the tight ends, the fullbacks, and those running backs when they did block for their peers. And then the running backs just trusted what they saw. And we did a good job of implementing a plan that we thought would be beneficial to us. We executed the plan as players. And when you have a game like that where things kind of just roll and things are working, especially early, that it makes the coordinator a little less hesitant to go back to something that worked. I'm all for staying with a plan that's getting 6 and 8 and 20 and 22, not, well, we've shown that before, let's do something else. Let's get that, let's squeeze the orange as long as we can, and as long as there's juice to be had, let's not get into something we don't necessarily need to get into. So very proud. Every week is its own week, and we did some really, really good things up front. And from a run perspective, without needing to rely on Gage a ton in the running game, although he had, you know, 40 or 50 yards himself, that long scramble run late in the game, was very proud of those guys. And don't forget those receivers blocking. Long touchdowns happen because receivers, O-linemen, tight ends, and running backs are downfield blocking for those people that are the recipients of those rushing touchdowns. So very, very, very good job by all 11 when we were in those rushing situations against a very quality opponent, Cal Poly.
In the end, 30 rushes, 441 yards, an average of 14.7 yards per carry, which not only broke but shattered the old Big Sky Conference record of 11.1 yards per carry. It was just amazing to watch. Have you seen anything like that in your 20-plus years here?
Well, the obvious answer is no, because it's something the Big Sky has not seen for forever when you're talking about average per rush, Again, just proud of the guys up front. It's something that we just had a day in the zone, if you will. So every student athlete out there, every professional player, anybody that's competed in sports, there's just days where you just feel like, you know, the basket is an ocean, you know, or the field is kind of your playground where you've just kind of owned the day. And we were in all three facets on Saturday. I felt like we owned the day from almost the very start of the game to the finish of the game. Guys were locked in the entire day. And so we can't rely on those statistics, you know, week in and week out, because that's never happened in the Big Sky. So we just happened to catch ourselves on a really, really good day against a quality opponent at home. The fans were amazing. They gave us another element to a home game with the students now involved, now that school's back in session. And so we'll try to replicate that, but know that that's going to be very tough as we go forward. But we're always striving for greatness and not settling for goodness.
42-0 now, when forcing more turnovers than the opposition. And not only did you get two turnovers to giving up one, but you turned them both into touchdowns, which is defensive touchdowns, which is fairly rare.
Yeah, you know, creating turnovers, we've got to create and continue to create more of them. Reducing turnovers, we must continue to keep reducing them. But it makes the team's responsibilities easier when the turnovers you create are instantly turned into 7 points. So it's not the offense and then driving down the length of the field to get 7 points off of the turnover the defense created. They were instantly created right away with Cole Karstetter's fumble recovery for a touchdown, and then Jimmy Townsend's right before half. And so when those points, it's much like a block punt. When those things happen and it's a momentum shift based on a turnover, and then you add the cherry on top with a touchdown instantly after the turnover's picked up or caught, those things create just a ton of momentum, a ton of belief, and then the other sides or the other elements of the team can then ride that momentum wave. And so again, defensively, they went on a long drive early in the game. We were benefited by an offsides or a false start by the right tackle in that situation on fourth and goal from the one, which put them in a field goal situation, which, again, when you get into the red zone, which is going to happen defensively, we don't want to give up 7 points. We ideally want to give up zero, but we're okay with three because we feel like offensively we can match their three with a seven at some point in the game. So a great job all around by our guys.
Were either of the defensive touchdowns a swing in the game, or was holding them to that field goal in the first drive a swing part of the ball game?
I think they're all swings. The natural reaction is when you have a defensive touchdown that they're so hard to come by. When you have two in a game and one right before half, knowing we're going to get the ball offensively coming out after halftime, I think anytime you score from a special teams or a defensive standpoint, those things aren't just momentum shifters. Those are just energy jolts to the system of a team. And having two in a matter of, you know, a 30-minute span and one right before you enter the locker room, I think that's amazing. Then almost the ensuing kickoff where we squib, we almost ended up on the ball right after that. I think we had three people laying on the ball and didn't end up coming up with the ball. So that could have been, quote-unquote, a turnover in a weird way after Jimmy Townsend's touchdown. So we got to keep pressing. We can't rest on our laurels. Again, we've got to create the turnovers. And to create turnovers, you got to be around the football. You got to be very disciplined, and you got to bring an element of passion and energy and mentality when you do get around the football to be able to give yourself a chance to then be on the receiving end of turnovers. And so I think all three had both had momentum shifts in it, but I think the one probably early got the guys going. We got to a 14-3 lead to extend the lead, and then that one right before half was really a beautiful thing, seeing Jimmy Townsend go, you know, 40, 45 plus yards or whatever it was without any pianos on his back.
You know, you guys got to play close to 70 guys in that ball game, and we saw some true freshmen make their debut, and Josh Jerome was one of them, and he had 9 tackles in his first game. Now he's a defensive tackle against the option, so that's probably the one team where a defensive tackle can rack up those kinds of stats, but that's a pretty impressive debut.
It is. And going in, we expect nothing less than anybody's best, whether they're a first game player or they're playing in their 40th game as an Eastern Washington football player. And so he rose to the occasion. Josh played really well, played physical. The lights weren't too bright for him. And some of those settings are really good for, like you say, D tackles to not have to overthink things. The simplification of things against that type of game plan allows a guy in his first collegiate game just to play. He's not worried about high hat. He's not worried about a screen game. He's not worried about necessarily D&D. He's locked into his gap, his man, his keys, his reads, and allows him to play that much faster, that much more physical. So we had a ton of guys that played really hard. Nick Forstell stands out as a guy that played extremely hard. Jimmy Townsend is always a blue-collar effort guy, especially with Keenan Williams out this last game, not playing a ton. Tyson Prunty from the back end was all over the field. The corners didn't get a ton of play. We knew they weren't going to have a ton of play based on the offense we were going to see, but they stayed disciplined the entire game with their eyes and their coverage tactics, and we did a lot of good things to allow us to build upon that performance.
All right, this week, Montana State, and you're going to face one of the more versatile guys in the conference in Troy Anderson. He and Caden Ellis, Idaho, are probably, you know, the two-way type guys, but Anderson's not only a guy that was a linebacker and a running back last year for him. Now he's a quarterback as well, and so he's running the ball. He's throwing it. There are probably similarities and differences to what they were doing last year with Chris Murray.
I would argue a step further than just the best in the conference. I would say they're maybe the most versatile, one of the most versatile players in the country. When you can play a quarterback that can play running back, that can also star at linebacker, that could probably put his hand down and rush the quarterback, and probably play safety and be a pretty good, darn good one at that. Troy Anderson's a special blend of versatility. He's a very high football intelligence individual. You wouldn't put a guy at quarterback that couldn't man and ask and be able to do the things Coach Choate and his staff are doing offensively with the run game, the read game, the throw game, reading coverages, reading defenders in their quarterback run game. He's a special player, and we saw that last year. He played both ways against us last year as a freshman, true freshman, and he is a very, very fine football player that creates headaches for any defensive coordinator. It happens to be us this week. So we've much like last week, where we don't concentrate or put all our eggs in one basket, but Joe Prothro last week made Cal Poly's offense go. We've got to make sure that Mr. Anderson is accounted for in a lot of areas, no matter where he is on the field, especially when they get in their two-quarterback system playing Rovig and Anderson in some of the same sets. So we've got to have our antennas up, but we still got to play fast, and that's tough, and play fearless, although we know they do certain things out of certain situations. We've got to be ready for anything. It'll be a ruckus crowd. It'll be a great environment for our guys, and they will be ready for us, but they do. They have some special players, and one of those special players is Troy Anderson, without question.
This is one of the tougher trips that you have to make. 1997 and 2010 were both pretty good years for the Eagles, and they lost in Bozeman in those years, and you were also part of years in 2004 and was it 2014 with wild games that Eastern came out on top of. So this is an interesting place we're going to this weekend.
It's a fun place, taking the bus east, I don't know what it is, 400 miles or whatever it may be to Bozeman. We'll have a walkthrough here in the morning, and we'll take off. I always like road trips because I think it's a bonding experience for everybody. Sometimes the bus trips are the most bonding on trips because you get the time in the bus in a confined environment going east in this case. And so road trips are never easy, no matter if you're on a plane or on a bus. They're hard, but if you want to classify yourself as a champion, you have to win on the road, no matter what level you're playing, no matter what sport you're playing. You've got to take your game on the road and play at hostile environments, especially one in Bozeman that's always a tough place to play. They've got a great environment, great coaching staff. They've got a ton of players that will feed off of their home crowd, and we've got to do our job to negate as much of that as we can and play the best brand of Eagle football that we can this weekend.
What do you do on close to a seven-hour bus ride? Are you watching movies? What are you guys doing on the way over there?
Lots of movies. Most teams will pick movies. We usually have a plethora of movies to choose from. They're not always there's always a vote that goes into that. And so sometimes you don't get what you want. Coaches stay out of it. It's player-driven. Must be appropriate, as always. There's a lot of talk. There's some film. There's a lot of music listening. I'm sure they'll catch a cat nap at a time or two. We'll take a little breather about halfway over there, get out, stretch our legs, grab some food. But you name it, it happens. And I think it's one of the most special things in college athletics to be able to go on the road with your brothers and perform what you love to do, and that's play football in a non-home environment.
Coach, thanks for the time. Good luck Saturday.
Thank you so much, Larry.
The next home football game is Saturday, October 6th at noon against Southern Utah. Tickets are available. Just go online to GoEags.com for more information. The football team is on the road this week at Montana State. Both teams are 1-0 in Big Sky Conference play and 3-1 overall on the season. Our pregame show will start at 11 o'clock Saturday morning with kickoff at 12:10 along the Eagle Sports Network from Learfield. We hope you can make it to David's Pizza in Spokane across from the arena Monday night. It's the Eagle Football Coaches Show. You can watch highlights with Coach Best starting at 5:30, then the radio show at 6 with Coach Best and player guests, also on the Eagle Sports Network from Learfield.
We continue on this week's Flight Report podcast with former Eastern head basketball coach Ray Giacoletti. And this past week, Coach was back as Alvin Snow was named or was honored with being in Eastern's latest Athletic Hall of Fame class. And Coach Alvin Snow, I'll give a little history here. For the previous, 10 years or thereabouts, Eastern really struggled in recruiting Seattle, whether it was John Wade or Steve Aggers. Coach Aggers finally got a guy named Marco Quinto to come out of Seattle to Eastern, but Marco wasn't a highly recruited player. But he got a guy named Alvin Snow to commit, and then he took a job to go to Loyola Marymount, and you came onto the scene, and you had to re-recruit Alvin Snow, right?
I did, but I'm glad you told the history of it, how it happened, because I was very lucky when I took the job at Eastern Washington because Steve Aggers had left it in great condition. Most times when you take a college basketball job, you're taking a job that's going to be a rebuilder. Believe me, I've done it. The last one I took was a rebuilder, and it got the best of me. But Steve Aggers did a great job. They had signed Alvin Snow early. Alvin ended up being the state player of the year, and we were fortunate enough, and at a time in athletics where a mother and family and a student athlete was going to honor their commitment. In today's world of athletics, I'm not sure that would happen, but it's proof in the pudding. Alvin made a good decision and is going to get rewarded in a lot of different ways with obviously helping us have great success at Eastern Washington. But now being a member of the Hall of Fame in Eastern Washington University history.
He is your 4 years at Eastern and his 4 years at Eastern were ran together. 69 wins over those 4 years, which at the time was the hallmark for this program as a Division I institution. 4 appearances into the Big Sky Conference championship game, which also is a hallmark to this day. For this institution as a Division I school. How important was he just on the floor to those 69 wins?
Alvin was the cornerstone. He was the first piece that we were lucky to be able to, once he had signed and I had gotten the job to get him to stick to that commitment. Jason Kerr, his high school coach at Franklin, played a huge part of that. His mother, Sherry, played a big part of that. But Alvin was the cornerstone from which we built upon. And, as you look back through the course of those 4 years, a lot happened. The first 2 years, we made great progress, got to the conference championship or tournament championship game each year, as you mentioned, couldn't knock down the door. But through that time, and again, I can't remember exactly what years it was, but you saw progress going on because of being able to go beat Washington at Washington one year. We had to play four or five guarantee games during those years. And so, you know, you had a chance to play some big boys at the time. You know, we opened up the season one year with St. Joe's, who was ranked ninth in the country, and got lucky and won. But that's how you could tell that program was getting better. Those players were gaining confidence by being able to go out and not only compete with some of those bigger schools, but be able to beat them, beat San Diego State one night at San Diego State. So those first 2 years really set the tone for year three and four. And three, getting an NIT bid was probably just as hard as getting an NCAA bid, to be quite honest with you. There's not that very many spots. And for a school the size of Eastern Washington and being in the Big Sky, it's darn near as tough as going to the NCAA tournament. And then actually breaking through the door the last year with winning an outright conference championship, would enable you then to host the conference tournament and to win two games in March and then kind of give you that free ticket into the NCAA tournament. So there was a real interesting progression that Elvin was the cornerstone of during those 4 years.
You know, and I talked about Eastern not being able to recruit in the state of Washington, but once you got Elvin, and he was a high-level player within the city of Seattle and a guy that had a little cachet, his name, and if it was okay for Alvin Snow to go here, maybe it's okay for me to go here, that started a flood. Mark Axton, Brendan Merritt, Keith Brown, T.J. Williams, Josh Bernard, Matt Nelson, Rodney Stuckey, Jake Bettinger, and the list goes on. I mean, he was kind of the pioneer for all that.
He really was, and he made it, you know, you said it, he made it okay for the rest of those guys to come to Eastern, especially after we started winning and having a chance to, you know, watch that program grow over 4 years. He certainly was huge in helping us recruit and attract those other young men that you mentioned there.
All right, so I think that Alvin would agree with us if he was on the phone, so I don't think we're telling any tales out of school here. He is an extremely strong-willed and stubborn individual. How hard was that to rein all that in over the course of a year?
You know, each, I think, coach has their strengths and weaknesses. My either strength or weakness was dealing with tough, hard-nosed guys. That's who I was able to relate to. I had a really hard time with soft guys, with guys that didn't want to lay it on the line each and every day. And so the toughness factor, and Alvin wanted to get better every day, and he allowed us to coach him hard. That, as a head coach for me, that was my strength. In being able to coach people hard and being able to be around tough guys where you didn't have to constantly motivate them to play harder or to be tougher. So I had no issues with Elvin. In fact, you know, I'd still be coaching today if I could coach young men like him. So he really wasn't that tough to coach because – his spirit, his toughness, his belief to be able to help others believe that we could go, you know, win games. It started off, you know, in year one, not only just win games at home, but, you know, be able to go the next step, win games on the road. You know, we had two games against Gonzaga over the course of those 4 years. Blake Stepp hit a last-second three to win, us being up two to win in the arena downtown. We went overtime 1 year with them. So, I mean, that, even though we didn't win, those were steps also that continue to help that program grow. You know, and sometimes you learn lessons from, I'm not a big, you know, trying to play close or you know, feel good about things. But, you know, at the time, that was a big deal to go right down to the wire twice with those guys. So that played a big part. But it was Alvin's mindset that helped everybody else understand that we could go do those things.
You know, you had a lot of hallmark wins at Eastern. You talked about the win over St. Joe's. It was your first year at a tournament at Cal. You talked earlier about the San Diego State game, the Washington game. You had the game against Northern Arizona that put the team into the NCAA tournament, to start with. It was an unprecedented run with the four Big Sky Conference tournament championship games in which you played. I go back, though, to that St. Joe's game. I think that was your first game at Eastern, was it not, at that tournament in Cal, or had we played prior to that? Or do you even remember?
I think it was my second year because Alvin didn't play that night.
That's right.
Alvin had a one-game suspension for playing in a Franklin Garfield alumni game in that summer. And so I believe it was the second year is how we started off the season, but I remember Elvin's presence with us was, and the other guy that was with us that had great presence that did not play that night was Brendan Merritt because he hurt his back the first year. So with those two guys on the bench, they're almost like coaches. They were coaches. And I just remember those guys each time out just reinforcing to the players that, you know, stay focused in the next 4 minutes and believe. And they were extremely instrumental in helping us be successful that night, even though they weren't in uniform.
All right, it's been since 2004 since you've been attached to Eastern Washington University. You were in Spokane for 6 years when you were an assistant at Gonzaga, but are you able to keep in contact at all with how this program is doing and what it's been able to do over the past few years?
Yeah, I've stayed in great contact with Coach Liggins. I think he's done an amazing job, and I think the biggest thing he did when he took over was go out and get all those alums of the late 90s, early 2000s, especially those young men that are still in the Pacific Northwest, and make them feel a part of the Eastern Washington program. And so the former players that I coach that talk to, they talk about what Coach Liggins reaching out to them, wanting to get them back on campus, wanting to get them to games, making them feel a part. And I think that's how you build tradition. That's how you build a family and longevity. And so Coach has done an amazing job in making those guys feel a part and back in that program.
Coach, it was great to see you last week at the Hall of Fame. I'm happy you were able to come back and look forward to seeing you again, hopefully fairly soon.
Sounds good. Appreciate it as always, Larry.
Eagle athletics teams are on the road this week. The soccer team plays at Montana Friday and Northern Colorado Sunday. They're 1-1 in Big Sky Conference play. The volleyball team is looking for their first conference win as they play Thursday night at Idaho State and Saturday night at Weber State. The men's and women's cross-country teams will compete at the Montana Invitational, and the women's golf team looks for their third straight tournament team title as they play in a tournament in Portland next week. For more information on any of these team schedules, go to goeags.com.
All right, welcome back to the Flight Report podcast. One of the Hall of Famers inducted last week into the Eastern Athletics Hall of Fame is former basketball player Alvin Snow. And what did this – did you have an idea of what the day last Saturday would be like for you, and how did the reality maybe match up with any expectations or any thoughts you might have had coming in?
It certainly exceeded any thoughts or ideas I had around what it would be like. I just was looking forward to a good time with some folks that shared a lot of good memories with. And one thing that I would say stood out to me, and I got to see a side of Coach Jack that I hadn't seen ever. And it felt really good to just be able to spend time with him and just to see all the people who were a part of making all of this happen and all the people who have been around the program. And I just, it just felt really good. I'm really grateful and appreciative to both you, Dave, and Dave was amazing. What he did for all of us was amazing.
Yeah, Dave Cook does a great job with that.
Yeah, it was special. I really wish I could sum it up. I can't find a way to. It just was an amazing moment. And I'm glad I got to share with a lot of people that I care about. So,
you know, Coach Giacoletti was there. You know, the dynamic between a player and his coach probably changes over time. And I'm guessing, have you had that relationship with other coaches, like maybe Coach Kerr, where it's changed since you played for him to now?
I think every relationship has some sort of maturation element to it. I think that certainly happens with the coach and the player relationship. Obviously, the position he's in when he's my coach is his show, is he's the boss. And now that we're just both two grown men looking at, looking back and talking about life, it's a totally different conversation. It's just really cool to get to this place.
I said in your induction that you were kind of a pioneer in that you were the first person to do a lot of things at Eastern. You were the first person to be the Big Sky Conference defensive MVP at Eastern. You were the first one to be a three-time All-Big Sky Conference player. You were the first one to be a Big Sky MVP. You were the first one to be an All-American. You were on the first teams to win 69 games over a four-year span. You guys won the most games of any team at that time at Eastern, and that was the case up until just the last couple of years. You were on the first NIT team. You were on the first NCAA team. Is there any particular memory? And then you were also the guy that led a group of Seattle people to Eastern at a time when it wasn't cool for Seattle and Tacoma kids to come to Eastern and be a basketball player. Was there any particular thing that sticks out to you in your 4 years that you're maybe most proud of, or is it a cumulative thing?
I mean, just here, when you're going through it, Larry, you don't realize all of this stuff is just piling up and happening. You don't realize it all. I certainly didn't. But to hear you kind of rattle it off the other day was just, honestly, it made me emotional. And I would say that, I got a response from Brendan Merrick the other day on Facebook too, when I posted about this stuff, and Rasheed posted about it, and he actually was responding to the post that Rasheed Wortham made, former teammate of mine. Now coach at Montana. And Brendan said, Al, you, something to the effect of, we followed your lead. You set the tone for what we were to be. And it was a pleasure to follow your lead. Something to that effect. He said, you set the tone with like your mentality, something along those lines. And then for me, hearing that from obviously someone as good as he was, and then just a teammate in general, just it was really humbling. Because when you're a player, you're just kind of going through it and doing what you think needs to be done for the group. I certainly wasn't thinking anything selfishly. I just wanted to win at all costs. And for guys to now as grown men be able to look at and say, I appreciate you allowing me to follow you. That's unbelievable. Like, I don't even know how to take that. Like, it's unbelievable.
You're one of the most, you're very competitive. You're very strong-willed. You're very determined. And so I asked Coach Giacoletti a question of whether I thought that there was, whether you might be at times I don't know if difficult to coach was a good idea or a good use of words by me, because I certainly didn't mean it in a negative way, but because you were so competitive and so driven and so strong-willed, could you have been a challenge to coach from time to time?
I'm sure coaches will find that guys with as much, you know, like all the things you said, guys that come along that are as strong-willed as I was or am, and I'm sure some coaches do find that challenging. I don't think Coach Giacoletti found that to be the challenge. I think for him specifically, he struggled with other types of guys, certainly not the kind of guy I was. I think that he's fiery himself. I think that he has a strong will, a strong desire, and he's highly competitive himself. So I don't think that that was something he struggled with at all. I think that he'd probably say something to the effect of, he wished he had more guys like me.
Right, yeah, he wanted to have, you know, 12 Alvin Snows.
Yeah, I would assume so. That's the feel. I could tell you at the time, I didn't know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now as an adult and being able to look back at it through grown man's lenses, right? Through a ton of life experiences, I would surely be able to say that I know that he'd want more guys like that on the roster.
Was there a game that sticks out to you as an Eastern player? And I think this is going to be a tough choice for you because obviously you guys played in the NCAA tournament and you won, you know, the championship game in 2004, the Big Sky Conference tournament to get there. But I know there was another game that happened when you were a junior that was very important to you. So can you make a choice between those two games as maybe your most memorable game, or was there another one that really sticks out to you as maybe being your favorite game at Eastern?
In terms of favorite, I'd probably surprise you with this, but I did tell Coach Giacoletti this. My actual favorite moment at Eastern Washington was not going over and beating Washington. It was not beating Northern Arizona. It was a game. I'm sorry, beating Northern Arizona to go to the NCAA tournament in the conference final. I'm not even sure who we played. I don't remember who we played, but there was a game my senior year in the regular season, near the end of the regular season, where we clinched home court for the conference tournament. I'm not sure who we beat that night, but that night is the night I was most emotional, because for 3 years in a row, we had somehow managed to lose. And my freshman year, we had a home game against Northridge. We could have clinched home court for the conference tournament, and we lost to a buzzer beater shot by Marcus Carr. And every year we had some level of opportunity to do what we needed to do to be able to host the tournament, except for my junior year when Weber State just went undefeated and they were really good, right? But other than that, we should have handled our business and hosted. My senior year, though, we actually accomplished that, and it was the most emotional thing for me because we pour so much into it. And to finally get to that place where you said, oh, we finally get to host this thing. We lost to three different teams and at three different venues the prior 3 years. So to finally get to host this thing, for me, I knew that this is it. We're going to the tournament. Regardless of what, I just felt like once we got to the conference tournament and we got to host it, there was no way we'd lose at home. So that was actually, I wish I could remember the team, but that was the biggest game for me. I looked at Coach when I came off the bench, and I couldn't stop crying, because it finally felt like all of this was not for naught.
Wow, I didn't know any of that, and I can't remember the team either, so that's a fantastic answer. You know, you took a lot of, we can't say maybe the word that I'd like to say here, but you took a lot of crap from people in Seattle over your choice of Eastern Washington. You know, you had to defend that choice, and sometimes you had to do it physically when you were, you know, young.
No question. There was a ton of situations, altercations, and to be honest, people still don't understand why. And what I would say to that is, I've always been one to just kind of do things my way, for once. And I was a bit of a unique, I guess, player. So for me, I didn't have a ton of high major schools after me, but I did have – I could have went to Washington. I could have went to a few different places. But Eastern was actually the first school to see me and get it. They were the first school to offer. They were the first coaching staff that I've built a relationship with. They were the first, just the same way that you name all these firsts that I had while I was at Eastern. I had all these, I can look back and say they were the first for me. They were the first to get it. They were the first to get me being a 6'2", I guess, kind of power guard, you know, and feel like I was a piece they needed to get to a championship level. And so for me, that was the most meaningful thing. And so that alone was why I said, you know what, I don't care who else comes. I don't care if Mike Krzyzewski calls. I'm going to Eastern Washington. And then when Coach left, when Coach Aggers left, I said to myself, the opportunity is still there to do what they want me to do. They wanted me to be the guy. They recruited me saying they wanted me to be the guy to come in and take this thing over the top. Because hey, the year before I got there, they were close to winning a championship. And so I said, you know what? I'm up for that challenge. And when they left, I decided to honor my commitment because I still wanted that opportunity.
Yeah, you know, you talked about your opportunities to, you know, win a game in the regular season to get to host a conference championship tournament that 1999-2000 year, the year before you showed up. They had Montana at home with a chance. If they had won the game, they'd have been the league champ and had the bye, had a home court advantage, I mean. And instead, they lose to Montana, and they have to play Northern Arizona in the first round of the tournament. They had a seven-footer named Dan McClintock. They were hot at the time. They ended up winning the whole thing. They beat Montana on their own floor, and I guess I think Northridge beat Montana. But anyway, Northern Arizona won that and moved on. So that was a team that was really close, and Eastern had a lot of really close times before that 2004 season when you broke through. Tell people what you're doing these days. You're still connected with basketball, but tell us how you're connected with basketball now.
I just a lot of people there's a negative stigma around the word agent, so I typically don't use it myself, but I guess that's what you can call me. I'm an agent. I like to tell folks I represent professional basketball players. I will say that I think I do it in a unique way. I think that my players would also say the same thing. I really pour into my guys. I spend every day with them when they're home in the summer. I'm actually in the gym with them. I'm really blessed and fortunate to have played professionally for 10 years myself. So I have not to sound like I'm fooling myself at all, but I have some level of understanding about this thing and how it's supposed to be played, and I just try to give my guys all the information they need to be as equipped as possible for wherever they may end up, whatever level that they end up on. So,
well, in your playing career, you played all over the world too.
Yes, and I think that actually helped because I was able to I had to learn tons of different perspectives on this thing, right? I had coaches from all over the world. I had to be able to learn all sorts of ways and thoughts and ideas and philosophies on how this game should be played. So with that, I'm able to kind of pull it all in and then spew it all out and give all of it to these guys. And I think that it allows for them to be ahead of the curve when they get where they're going.
Well, it was a great day last Saturday for you and all the other inductees. It was fantastic to spend a little time with you and Coach Giacoletti afterward on Saturday. I'm proud and happy that I was able to be there, and welcome to the Hall of Fame, man. It won't be the first, or it won't be the last one for you.
But it feels amazing. I've been riding high ever since, so I'm really appreciative, and I'm grateful and thankful to everybody at Eastern. I appreciate you specifically for the wonderful introduction and just all the involvement you've had over the years. We've managed to stay in contact all throughout this time, and I'm thankful to you for all you've been.
One of the great players at Eastern Washington University, and as I said, one of the most tough-minded, competitive guys, and that team had a bunch of those type of guys, Mark Axton and Brendan Merritt, and that team, I'm talking about that 2004 team that made it to the NCAA tournament. 2003 team was a lot like that as well. They had those same guys, plus a guy like Keith Brown and some other players. And so, you know, those years were memorable years at Eastern. I was very pleased and very proud to be able to be at the Hall of Fame and get to see both of the men that we have talked to here on this Flight Report podcast, Coach Ray Giacoletti, as well as Alvin Snow. And congratulations to all of the folks. I didn't have as much history with the volleyball teams or with Kim Maxwell, now Kim Maxwell Dempsey, or Kurt Kramer, the jumper off the Eastern Track and Field team, or Dick Hannon from the who won the Service and Contribution Award, who spent a long time as a college administrator, although I do know Dick. And then Rick Warman was before my time at Eastern, but I've gotten to know him some over the years. And Jeff Ogden, I covered. I saw every game he played as a collegian. So it was a special time with a lot of great connections among those players and among those athletes and student athletes and their families. And the Hall of Fame is my favorite day of the year at Eastern. If you have not been to a Hall of Fame breakfast, I encourage you to go in 2019 and kind of soak in the history of Eastern athletics. You can listen to the Flight Report in many different ways. You can go to GoEags.com, click on Fan Zone, then on Flight Report with Larry Weir, and listen from there. Or if you're a regular podcast consumer, you can subscribe or just listen through most of the major podcast sites like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, CastBox, Radio Public, Pocket Casts, and iHeartRadio. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Flight Report. And thanks to football coach Aaron Best, as well as Hall of Fame inductee Alvin Snow and former men's basketball coach Ray Giacoletti. Don't forget, the 5th-ranked Eagle football team plays at Montana State Saturday. Our pregame show starts at 11 with kickoff just after noon on the Eagle Radio Network from Learfield. Thanks for listening to this week's Flight Report. I'm Larry Weir.
You've been listening to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics, spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.